Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio. Betty, scary, weird, and creepy. Welcome to Eerie House Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show here along with
Guy the Ghoul, blah blah to you all.
And we are here tonight to kind of segue off of some thoughts from yesterday. We here at Eerie House Radio, we did the Oldie Timey Radio, and it was a celebration, homage, if you will, to Peter Lorre, Peter the Great, Lorre. And during our conversation, of course, Basil Rathbone's name came up a couple of times. Gar had brought up Comedy of Terrors, which was a great film with Peter Lorre. Well, Basil Rathbone was in it too, and somehow in the conversation we talked about how Sean Connery was the only 007 for us. Well, in the same way, I feel that Basil Rathbone is the only Sherlock Holmes.
I don't know if it's my training or what, but I've always called him Basil Rathbone, and when you say Basil, it's like, no, Basil. tomato.
It's just my favorite seasoning, but
Basil.
No, he's been in so many movies that I absolutely love. He was in the 1939 Tower of London. I think that's my favorite role of his, where he plays Sir Richard of Gloucester, the brother of King Edward. And he was a sinister guy. He ended up killing Vincent Price in the movie, who played a duke, I believe, or a baron or something, a lower royalty guy. And he was just an evil plotter. Carl
right.
was in the film. It's a very, very good movie, but that's my favorite role, I think, of Basil outside of Sherlock Holmes.
I understand the focus is on Basil, but Vincent Price has, in his career, had several little, almost just walk-on, walk-off roles. You know, there was one called The Bat, and he was in it for like a heartbeat, and it was gone.
Hey, we got someone joining us here.
It's big on the banner, on the movie poster, starring Vincent Price. And you go in, he's gone. What happened? You blink and you missed it.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Hey, Gar, we have someone joining us here in Eerie House. It appears to be a fellow Ohioan. Hello, caller.
Hey, haven't talked to you guys for hours.
Caller Hack, it's our old friend, Dave Binkley from Weirdness Really Bad Movie. Hi, Dave.
Yay, what a great topic tonight.
Hello, Dave. Blah, blah to you.
Gar, how are you tonight?
I am garish, even more than normal. I'm in my makeup chair doing makeup-y things to do the thing later at 8 o'clock.
I would say in general you're more than normal.
Yeah, more ghouly than normal here.
There you go. Basil Rathbone. I was just talking
Basil.
About how I love them in Basil. Basil. Rathbone.
It depends on what part of South Africa you come from, the way you
that's
say
right.
it, I guess.
Basil
Interestingly
Lincoln.
Enough, that's where he was born back a long time ago. In 1892, and an interesting fact I found about him, okay, is that one of his relatives, I think a great uncle or something, was in the party that was guarding President Lincoln, and this Rathbone was stabbed by John Wilkes Booth during the escape, not fatally, but yeah.
I ran across something curious about Basil Rathbone. I cannot confirm it, though. He was born with a tail.
Okay.
Okay, all right. Wow, that took a while, didn't it? Okay. Anyway.
Is that anything like the Jamie Lee Curtis stories, or I don't know?
Was she born with a tail? I don't know, man.
Well, no, not exactly a tail.
Anyway.
Let's move on. Moving on.
That took a left turn, didn't it?
No, I find it interesting that Rathbone played a lot of costume-type characters early in his career, possibly due to his experience in Shakespeare.
He was excellent swordsman, from what I understand. Or mediocre.
Actually, I think he won an award when he was Tybalt in Romeo and Juliet for his swordsmanship. And
Sergeant,
I guess one of the finest.
His tail.
No, not his tail. No. One of his finest performances with a sword, I guess, was during the Danny Kaye movie. Was that the Inspector General? Is that which one it was?
Mm.
Yeah. It was?
Yes, I think
that's. And it was. They said that was one of the finest duels that's ever been put onto film.
Christopher Lee was in a few films with Basil, and there was swordplay.
Do you have to swallow something when you say it that way, Gar, or what?
Did I do what?
Do you have to swallow something when you say his name that way, or what?
Who, Basil? Or
yes,
Christopher
yes.
Lee? What? Basil Rathbone? Anyway.
It's Christopher Lee.
Stolfer, yeah. Sarah Lee Cakes. No, that's somebody else. From what I understood, Christopher Lee being quoted as saying, if you ever do swordplay, or if you ever see swordplay, real swordplay, in a film, somebody got cut. You always get cut. That's something he said. He said, it's just going to happen. Several times he was lacerated with the old swordplay. So,
he showed his expertise also in Tower of London. There was a great deal of swordplay. He was training the king's sons and also practicing himself with his brother at swordplay. And, yeah, his stuff didn't look like this. Some of the fakey nonsense you see in some of the older films, the swordplay was very, very good.
Yeah, they were kind of playing for keeps back then. Mm. If you will.
Amazingly, his movie career started in 1921 with a film called Innocent, playing Amadis de Jocelyn. Okay.
Our name was
He played a lot of villains up until the time he played Sherlock Holmes. That he jumped at the chance because. Instead of playing the villain, I get to capture them. But he played a lot of villains and bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
Was he not in when we get back to the some of the swordplay? Was he not also in the Three Musketeers with one Gene Kelly did? I thought.
I don't know. I know he was in The Adventures of Robin Hood in 1938.
I'm not
finding that. And I think the Danny Kaye film you're thinking of is The Court Jester.
Court Jester, yes, that was the one.
Off of Basil again, do you think Danny Kaye was into like period pieces with all the? He did a lot of stuff of the medieval times, didn't he? Sounds like.
Well, yeah, he did. Hans Christian Andersen was set quite some time ago.
Sounds like he's got a little hang-up with the medieval times.
He only seemed to do a handful of movies, yeah.
He did play a lot of villains, including Pontius Pilate in The Last Days of Pompeii.
Would you say that maybe the villainous, the antagonistic roles are a little bit meatier than the other guy, than the good guys?
Yeah, absolutely. I think
a
lot of
more fun, I think, you know.
Well, not
Vincent
only that,
Price
but
used to relish
to make a really
playing that.
Yeah, to be a really good guy, don't you have to have a really great villain? Otherwise, you're just a nice guy. But
exactly.
You know, that's
with
why I like, you know, John Lithgow and like in Cliffhanger, you know, he made Stallone because he was so bad, he was so evil, you know.
Yeah.
I like to be evil. That's right. Yeah.
What's that other fellow's name? John Malkovich.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
He's another one that brings out the hero because he plays such crazed evil characters. Vincent Price used to love playing the evil roles. He relished it. He could really sink his chops into that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think he'd mind being as versatile as he was. I don't think he minded being the bad guy. But I'm loving Sherlock Holmes with Nigel Bruce. That's my image of Sherlock Holmes.
I think in these days and times, and because a lot of people that were actually around when those were released in a cinema, you might be in a home these days. It was a long time ago. My exposure to Basil Rathbone in the Sherlock Holmes portrayals was actually in the 70s, on a local television station. Local television stations used to fill their mornings with local movies. They'd have the Good Morning Movie or something like that. And a lot of times they would grab hold of these Sherlock Holmes films and just play them over. I just loved them. They were in there.
Yeah, my first exposure was probably in the late 60s. And a story behind that is, again, it was an independent station there in Buffalo. We had ABC, NBC, CBS, and we could see, distantly, but we could see a local Canadian station. And, of course, there was a PBS station then. But we got a new independent station. Now, on Friday nights, they switched off between Charlie Chan movies and Sherlock Holmes movies. And my parents always went square dancing on Friday nights, and my sister and I always snuck down to watch these movies, and we'd never get to see the last reel of it because
the parents would come home.
As parents would pull in, we'd shut off the TV and run upstairs.
Bears! Bears over the head! Lots
so
of
I never got to see the end of the movies then!
Right.
That's a great memory. For me, it was, I think Channel 43 had them Saturday afternoons. As I recall, it was either Saturday or Sunday, but I'm pretty sure it was after Superhost. Sometimes on Friday nights, I think even Big Chuck ran a few of the old.
He did. Actually, yeah, he did.
We forgot to make note of this yesterday, talking of Peter Lorre. Wow, I can't even remember his name. One of the things that he got into was that series. There were 7 or 8 of those films of Mr. Moto. And actually, they were a bounce off of Charlie Chan. Charlie Chan first, then Mr. Moto, to the best of my knowledge, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And actually, one of the Mr. Moto films was actually a Charlie Chan film they were shooting when Warner Olin died. They filmed the other scenes with Peter Lorre as Moto in the championship ring or something like that was the Moto episode, I think. And they also had Number One Son in that, and then Number One Son disappeared from the Charlie Chan movies, but he was in that one Mr. Moto film, and then he disappeared until the end of the series.
A little weird continuity there, huh?
Joining us here in Erie House, I think 66 is here.
Hello.
Well, hey.
Hey,
y'all. I love
you
guys. That was some of the worst Peter Lorre impressions I ever heard. I loved it.
There you go.
God.
What are you saying? We can't do Peter Lorre.
Well, thanks for joining us
time
yesterday.
You
Nick.
Have laid your hands upon me.
Not without a court order, lady. Anyway,
I was hoping, anyway.
Anyway, moving on.
Some of his later roles were a lot of fun, too. I liked Basil Rathbone in Hillbillies in a Haunted House very, very shortly before he died. He was in that film.
It was hard to choke that one down. You know, my favorite one of his was, which one of his was the comedy ones where he had that long death scene where he kept
the comedy of errors.
Comedy of errors. Where he had somnambule limb meniscus. I don't know. He had some type of sleeping sickness. And Vincent Price, the coroner, kept pronouncing him dead. And he wouldn't stay down.
Talking again. I love that one.
He'd always wake up saying, "What place is this?
What place?" Yeah, he was a dramatic actor or something in it. And it was another little comedy nod was that Vincent Price was the one and only town funeral guy.
Did you guys know that Basil Rathbone was the greatest swordsman in Hollywood? He had to actually lose on purpose to, like, Errol Flynn and all those, and Tyrone Power and those people.
You completely missed our discussion earlier. We were talking about his tail. Anyway.
Maybe that's how he lost his tail.
He did.
He did have some pretty memorable roles, you know, towards the end of his career and the end of his life. Ghost in the Invisible Bikini. I remember him in Queen of Blood.
Oh, that was so bad.
Queen of Blood, that's nice and lurid. I love that one. That was her and her jelly white egg.
She reminded me of the Green Lady in Lost.
Dennis Hopper. You can't say that every day.
A comedic nod on the old Vincent, on that comedy of terrors, was the mortician in the fact that he would reuse the same coffin. Love that. He would reuse it. I think it had a hinge on the end, so they just tip it and the body would slide into the grave and they'd drive off with the same.
Didn't you think the Queen of Blood, the alien there, didn't she remind you of the Green Lady from Lost in Space? Smith.
And she had a hairdo like the Andorians in Star Trek.
In 1962, Basil was in The Magic Sword and also in Tales of Terror.
Yeah. Oh,
he played the bad genie or the bad caliph or whatever he was. I don't know, wizard.
Mm-hmm.
He also portrayed a scientist, I think, in some type of space sci-fi.
Yes, Voyage to the Prehistoric Planet.
Oh, that really bad
planet.
One, yeah.
Yeah, and about being in your role.
Roger.
He could have stayed home and just, you know, dropped a quarter in the old thing there. This is
he had kind of phone that one, yeah. He needed a paycheck.
Dave
Roger Corman
saying something about
filmed his parts in one day.
Right, exactly. Mm. He was like, yeah, Roger Corman had him on his taxi timer.
Well, like an egg timer.
There's a movie from the
1950s. Contractually obligated for X number of hours, not necessarily the completion of a single film, but contractually obligated for X number of hours of acting. And so if they would not get the completion of all the acting time, old Corbin roll out another film and go, "Hey, you got another 10 minutes you owe me." And so they grab him for that long.
That might be another movie for us.
I recently discovered last year on and they had it on Netflix. I don't think it's up there anymore. A film that I had never seen. For somehow, I had never seen it. From 1956, it featured Lon Chaney Jr., Tor Johnson's in it. And of course, Basil Rathbone as a scientist trying to revive his wife.
Dead Wives.
And,
good old. Why do we want the Dead Wives coming back? Were they? Come on. Really?
And it's called the Black Sleep.
Which I remember,
it was the name of a medicine that would simulate death, and this doctor who was accused of a crime.
I know most husbands would like to give it to their wives. I don't understand why he was bringing her back, but whatever.
I just figured it out. I think the deal is if you can bring your wife back from the dead, you get a tax exemption.
Yeah, and you get to keep the insurance money too. You know.
That's right.
There you go.
She was dead once. We got papers. We got proof. Thanks for playing.
Basil was also in We're No Angels in 1955. Now, if I'm not mistaken, that's a...
I love that one, yeah, where the snake gets him. He found him.
Yep.
That's
a Dead End Kids movie, isn't it? Isn't that a Dead End Kids movie?
No
Angels.
That's Humphrey Bogart and Peter Ustinov.
Oh, yes, yes.
And Aldo Ray are the one starring, and then Basil's the evil uncle. He's a cousin to the guy that played Topper, you know, Leo G. Carroll, who runs the shop. They're a real kind-hearted person. They kind of move in on him. Then they take care of him, of course.
Now Dave could probably tell us more about the radio aspect of Basil's career. They called it The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes in the movies, but it was The New Adventures on radio.
Yeah, he did it both for the NBC Blue Network and for Mutual. And they expected to continue on with the radio series because they also expected him to sign the contract to extend the Sherlock Holmes movie serials. But he didn't sign, and... Nigel Bruce went on to play Watson on the radio for a while longer than he I think he was still obligated contractually, but Basil Rathbone was not. Just kind of an odd thing there. I did hear some other. I think Tom Conway stepped in when Basil Rathbone left the role to take over the role of Sherlock Holmes on radio.
That's so funny because Dale and I, right prior to switching on the on switch with broadcast, we were talking about that, and I was like, I'm pretty sure Nigel Bruce did it solo for a little bit, but I was pretty sure that at one there were several different incarnations, one of them on radio where Basil did it with Nigel.
Right,
they totally dumbed him down for that for the role. I mean, Nigel Bruce, he was smart in the books. He heavily assisted Sherlock. He wasn't like the bumbling fool they made him in the movie.
Well,
that's the
he
difference.
Was a doctor, but he
because I read every single Sherlock Holmes thing they had.
He was a doctor.
So.
He wasn't an idiot, but for the movies they turned him into comic
relief. No, he was smart.
Exactly, for the movies.
That was Which I see why they did it. I mean, they needed a foil, kind of, besides Lestrade, who was also dumb, kind of.
Yeah, Lestrade wasn't. There were a couple times that they made Lestrade where he picked up on what Holmes liked, like in the
where he actually instinctively joined in, yeah.
Right, right. So these people were only complete idiots until they needed them not to be.
Not to be, exactly.
Well, I think Lestrade's main reason for being was, you can arrest him now, officer.
Yeah, now that we've done
other than that, Holmes didn't have much use for Lestrade. You bumbling idiot or whatever. Yeah.
Well, everybody was compared to him, basically. And you couldn't do that in the movies. He was a heavy drug addict. I mean, he did heroin and coke in the book. In the books.
Yeah.
Oh yeah!
Go ahead. Hold that thought. Hold that thought, folks. We'll be right back in 10 seconds.
The sound you hear is dripping blood. This is the start of Black Sunday.
Sorry, I had to do that.
Is it Sunday?
It's Saturday.
Is it Black Saturday? Black Sunday on Saturday? Yeah, I didn't know that.
No.
Yeah.
I hate it.
There are currently, I think, on the old television tube these days, there are at least two different Sherlock Holmes incarnations going right now. One is, I think it's on ABC. It might be NBC, I can't. And the other's out of the UK.
Benedict Cumberbatch one?
Yes, as the Sherlock
Holmes. The Cumberbatch one, I'm not seeing much drug use. The other one, he's having to go to, like, Heroines Anonymous or whatever it's called. That's not the name.
Oh, yeah, you mean the modern one with Lucy Liu?
Yeah, that one.
They bendered
Watson on that one. A little gender bender never hurt anybody, right?
I think it was an interesting version because they modernized it. And especially the Cumberbund ones where they take actual wording from the original Sherlock Holmes stories, lift them and put them into modern day circumstances. I like that a lot.
There were a couple times that Basil dressed in drag in the early films. As disguises.
You're right.
He did a lot of disguises, especially in the books.
Yeah.
So he wasn't beyond doing that.
We still there? Hello.
Yeah.
We are still here. Okay. Grooving.
I could never find a character Hooper for some reason. Stop it.
Cumberbund to the rescue.
Cumberbund. Close enough.
Did you know that Basil Rathbone was also, he did a voiceover for The Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad in 1949. How about that?
For
the cartoon.
Disney?
I didn't realize that.
For the Disney ride or what? What was that for?
Yeah.
A cartoon, an animation, what?
Yeah, it was a cartoon in 1949, a short cartoon. He was a narrator for a segment called The Wind in the Willows.
Was that Walt Disney creation?
I believe so. Let me research further.
There you go. Push a button.
It was an animated package film produced by Walt Disney's and released by RKO. In two segments, the Wind in the Willows and the Legend of Sleepy Hollow.
Gar wins again. Anyway,
RKO. It had to be old. My God.
Yep. It also starred the voice of Bing Crosby as well.
Ba 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 boo.
How about that?
Ba 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 boo.
Ba 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 boo.
I'll beat you with a bag of oranges, boy. It won't show.
Now, while I was doing research for this, I found I think it's BasilRathbone.net, they sell albums. I guess he did some readings and narrations like Price, and like others, he also read some Edgar Allan Poe, and, you know, these were available on record.
He had a great voice. He did, you know, cultured. I mean, what do you, I'd listen.
He read The Christmas Carol. You can add Charles Dickens to the list.
Yes, that is correct. Yeah, and I guess also on radio, Dave, he was on something in the early 50s called the Theater Guild on the Air. I think he portrayed a couple episodes of it. He was in Oliver Twist.
Theater Guild on the Air was one of those shows where a lot of times they would put movies into half an hour. Would try to snag one of the stars from that particular movie. How you could do a two-hour or even an hour movie in half an hour was beyond me, but they sure tried.
Thank you, Reader's Digest.
The Reader's Digest version. Well, he did it also on Lux Radio Theater in 1937, creating his character from Captain Blood. Which he also starred in film.
And Lux Radio Theater went for a full hour. Sometimes that was as long as the movies are just shy of that. The Ford Theater also was an hour long, and going back to the Ford Theater, I think one of the best things is they always joked about Jack Benny and his movie The Horn Blows at Midnight, and actually he did that on the Ford Theater. It was actually better than the movie, I thought. By the condensing, and they only took out like 7 minutes of that to be in the Ford Theater. But they tried to recreate many of the cast, especially Lux, tried to get as many of the original cast into our rebroadcast, radio broadcast of the movie.
Did Jack Benny ever do a kind of a tongue-in-cheek, why can't I think? Not Grimm's Fairy Tales, but Fairy Tales. Did he ever, maybe that was something he did on his own program. He dressed up like little Jack Horner or something.
I remember something like that, too. But...
that was on his own program. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He was also in the movie The Ghost.
Busy Boss. Loved Rochester.
Yeah, he only did a handful of movies. The movies he did never really seemed to do well. Although I always liked George Washington Slept Here, and even Mel Brooks liked To Be or Not to Be so much that he redid it with his wife Anne Bancroft years later, essentially redoing the Jack Benny movie.
Oh, I'll be darned. Rathbone was also in a movie called The Ghost in the Invisible Bikini. Now, do you remember the biker character, Eric Von Zipper?
Eric Von Zipper!
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
It was Harvey, what's his name? What, Harvey Lembeck?
Harvey Lembeck. Harvey Lembeck. Well, I guess in
the
film
role
when
he...
see...
That was a continuing role. That like carried over.
When he first saw Basil Rathbone, he goes, hey, this guy looks like Sherlock Holmes.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. It was very. Yeah. It was so bad. Those last few ones were just really bad. Now, was that a Corbin flick as well? The Invisible Bikini thing.
Yeah.
It smelled like it.
But they're fun. Those movies are fun.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about the comedy of terrors. That one, I said last night, I think. Yeah, last night. That one is funny all day long. But then Corman did The Raven, and I was like, no, I'm not getting it. Not everything is award-winning.
Want to take a minute here to say hi to some folks in the chat. Evil Annie Reppert, Fogs Bane, and Gil Girl. Gil Girl, a long time. Welcome back.
Hi, everybody.
Hey.
La-da-dee-dee-dee. Yeah, there's so many fake voices around here, we don't know who's talking.
And sometimes no one at all.
Could be Basil himself.
It could be Basil. Basil.
like others in Hollywood, you know, he did serve in the service, and he was awarded a military cross. And there's an interesting story he mentioned, and what he said was, "All I did, old man, was disguise myself as a tree. That's correct, a tree, and cross no man's land to gather a bit of information from the German lines. I have not since been called upon to play a tree."
So that was obviously World War One. He tried to enlist for World War Two, but they said he was too old at that point.
Too old, under tall for an
too
oak
old.
Tree. Oh,
that's weird because they let Clark Gable join.
They were going to use trees in that war, I guess. So.
Yeah. Did you guys like him in Son of Frankenstein as Wolf?
Yes.
Von Frankenstein.
Yes, very
yeah.
much.
Yeah, he could have.
It's a Frankenstein or Frankenstein.
Curly hair, caught in the head. But other than that, I liked it.
Did he backhand that kid? I can't remember.
I was hoping the monster would get him, but he didn't.
No.
No, he was not mean to his son at all. Now, according to IMDb, Rathbone made $5,000 a week making Captain Blood back in 1935. For Son of Frankenstein, he was making $3,500 a week. In Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, one of my favorite films, $4,000 a week. And for his brief appearance in Hillbillies in a Haunted House, he made $10,000.
Wow.
In 1967. The year he passed of a heart attack.
Hillbillies in a Haunted House, eh?
That's a fun movie.
It is. It's so bad, it's delicious.
Yes, exactly.
Merle Haggard, all kind of people fell into that one.
Actually, I have not seen that one. I'll have to look that one up.
There's a vehicle out there that supports Pat Boone in a horror movie. Or just, I don't know, that's crazy. It was really bad. I saw it. I had to see it.
I can't support Pat Boone, period. I'm sorry.
Why? I have to suffer at least twice through these films. I got to watch it, you know, just to make sure it passes my own purview. And then I have to show it again and go, all right, here we go, horror movie lovers. And is this going to hurt?
Just so you know why you hated it. That's the only reason you watch it again.
Yeah. It's like, I had to suffer, so here you go, patrons. Yeah.
You too. Yep, misery loves company.
All right. And I am multitasking as I am applying all kinds of fun makeup so I can go live at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for my own horror movie hoo-ha in a bit.
What are you showing tonight?
What am I showing? The pre-feature is the G-Man versus... Oh, what is it? The Tiger Dragon? The Dragon Tiger? I can't remember. The G-Man versus a Dragon from 43. The other film is also from 43, and... Oh, what is it? I'm not near the data. Mysterious Doctor or something? I forget. I don't know. Killer Dermatologist. I can't remember what it is.
What you got to do, Sticks, is go to his Facebook page, and there's links up there, and you can watch it. It's an iVlog thingy. It's a lot of fun.
Okay.
If you get on Facebook, you go, you type in Horrible Horror starring Gar, G-A-R, B-T-H-E, Ghoul, G-H-O-U-L.
Gar the Ghoul.
Gar the Ghoul, yes, like the fish. Or if you say it real quick, it sounds like gargoyle. Guard the Ghoul! Okay, anyway. It's on the old Facebook thing there. And I'm not tooting my own horn. But, it's a happening thing.
Toot away, bro. That's cool.
It keeps me off the streets, you know? And that's what we're shooting for.
What? No Basil Rathbone tonight?
No Basil. 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 Basil, Basil.
No Basil. I guess there's, you know, tomatoes involved. You know?
I actually don't know who's in the film that I'm showing tonight.
That's a hell of an endorsement. Yay!
Yes, I have no idea who these people are, but maybe you will. Enjoy the film! I don't know.
I found a few more tidbits here about Basil Rathbone. He was a favorite choice of the author of Gone with the Wind, you know, Margaret Mitchell, to play Rhett Butler.
Oh, wow. Mm.
That would have been a different take, huh?
It would have.
Yeah, it would have. But
I always wanted to see Art Carney do that one.
Before he was a villain, he played a lot of leading roles. He was considered an idol. And here's an interesting fact I didn't know.
He was handsome in his very own way, though. You know?
Oh, yeah.
He was.
Now, I didn't know this, but he was a firm believer in ESP. When he was 4 years old, his parents were on a boat taking him from South Africa to Britain. His mother had a dream that the ship was going to sink right in the Bay of Biscay and convinced her husband that they should take a later ship. That ship did sink, that they left.
See?
I'm thinking it was an insurance scam, my brother.
It could have been. It could have been.
She sunk that ship deliberately. We'll never know.
Oh, it looks like he even took one spin at being Philo Vance in 1930. William Powell did it three times. He did it just once in 1930.
The radio detective?
The Bishop murder case. It was radio and movies. They were movies as well. In 1930, he did the Bishop murder case.
But Philo Vance, he was a private eye, right?
Yeah.
Yes, he was.
Okay. Similar to Marlowe, Mike Hammer, and all of them.
Mike Hammer.
Hammer. Hammer him upside the head.
Ding, 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 ding. What else? Oh, it's got to dry.
Has anybody seen the film The Great Mouse Detective?
I have. Oh, he did voice acting in that one?
Well, they had a character named Basil in there that was a detective, and obviously it was named after Basil Rathbone.
Oh, him, yeah.
It was more of an inspiration than he was. He was not actually in it, but he was an inspiration for one of the characters, yes.
They picked the name, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, actually, the funny thing is, you know, and getting back to the Sherlock Holmes, him portraying Sherlock Holmes, if you look at go back and find some of the original art renditions that were made of Sherlock Holmes during the time
just like him, huh?
Of the Strand, and that he looked exactly like the likeness of Sherlock Holmes that was done in the 1890s.
The original ones, I had reprints of it.
Yeah, it looks just like Basil Rathbone.
It did.
So did, I think he would have made a good The Shadow. Yeah. What was that guy's name? Cranston?
Oh, yeah.
Lamont Cranston.
And
of course,
that
mouse detector again lends to my tail story, but anyway.
No, I can picture that.
Now forever, Basil will have a tail. I'm like, he's had a tail, really? Why do you think he wore those long coats? He had a tail.
Stop with the tail.
Tail of the tail. Anyway.
A Tale of Two Cities.
The Tale of, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which Basil Rathbone was in 1935.
He was?
Another lending of that tale. Dun, dun, dun.
Another rambling concourse that ended up somewhere. See, you know, you never know.
He was in David Copperfield in The Last Days of Pompeii. And Eric Caron but yeah, he was real busy in 1935. That was the year he also did Captain Blood and A Tale of Two Cities.
Yeah, I was going to say he was the one that did the bad one, and it was a Cleopatra one, but that was Vincent Price, I think.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of. Which, you know, he sounded so continental, but he was from St. Louis. Vincent was.
Yep.
Missouri. You would never believe it.
You would almost swear he was
from
England
somewhere, huh?
Yeah. I think 1939 was the best.
I
think 39 was the
voice.
Was the best year for Basil. In 39 he did Son of Frankenstein, Hound of the Baskervilles, Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, and Tower of London. A couple other films too, but I mean those are all very, very good films. Very memorable films.
Very major, yeah. You know, in the chronicles of the old Universal stuff.
I always put Hound of the Baskervilles as the best Holmes film that he did. I enjoyed all of them, but that one was by far the best. And that was the first one. That was the first one he did.
First novel, yeah.
As Sherlock Holmes. That was the what?
It was one of the first novels. I mean, he had a lot of short stories, though. I read
That was written after Doyle had killed him off. That's why.
Well, he had him go. He had him like die at the falls with Moriarty, but then he didn't die. You know what I mean? Then he snuck back around and got in touch with the doctor. You know, he's supposedly dead. And
right,
but
that's why that one was. That's why that came in the as a memoirs of Sherlock Holmes, because actually at that point he was still dead, but Watson was recounting more stories.
Going back over his old cases. That's how it starts. He's talking about old cases. That's that's the bookend of it. Yeah.
Right.
I thought it was
I think of all the stories that he wrote, that was Conan Doyle's best story too. I thought of all the stories that he wrote, it was
I liked it. I do. I like it a whole lot. I really do. And it was very, very. Very complicated the way it was going down with the brother that was escaped convict and all the other stuff going on, and then those two people on the moors, the brother and sister supposedly. It was really good though.
Yeah, it was. Excellent story and a great movie adaptation as well.
It was. It was good. I liked the woman in red, too. Or was it the woman in green? I can't remember if it was red or green, one.
I think it's woman in green.
Yeah, yes. The Duncan, what's his name? The colonel, he worked for Moriarty. He was in the movie. He was in the books, too. I remember the stories, two of them.
Not to be confused with the lesser-known Elephant in Teal.
In the room? Is it in the room with us? Should have mentioned it.
Could be.
The Elephant in Teal. How dare you? How did I lose some weight?
No elephants were harmed in the processing of this film.
I've got to wear black T-shirts from now on.
So, Dave, starting with Dave anyway, I'd like to ask all of you this. Outside of Sherlock Holmes, I already mentioned my favorite role as Richard III in Tower of London. What's your favorite non-Sherlock Holmes role, Dave?
I did like him a lot in Son of Frankenstein. That one would be right up there. Trying to run down I'm looking down the list real quick. Son of Frankenstein, I just, that outside of the Sherlock Holmes probably was one of my more favorite portrayals of his. I'd probably go with that.
And how about you?
I did enjoy him a lot on television. When he did the Dead Man's Coat on Lights Out, I thought.
Yeah.
I realized that was only a half hour performance, but I loved him in that. I thought that was, and it was in a sense very out of character. He was very meek and a servant and that kind of a thing. So that was very different than almost anything else he did.
How about you, 66? What would you say
in,
your
in
favorite?
Comedy of Terror.
I have to give it a tie. I like the Frankenstein one, but I like the one, like I said, we had that really long death scene, the comedy one.
Yeah. A comedy of terror.
The Frankenstein one.
How about you, Gar? What would you say your favorite non-Sherlock Holmes role for Basil Rathbone is for you? Something
with
a tail.
I'm going to have to run with the 1929 King feature short of Popeye.
What?
Did he play olive oil? No.
He was Pluto. I'll get you a yellow squirt.
So you think you're a bad guy there, Sherlock?
Oh, Popeye.
No.
Going quite a ways with that one, but okay, here we go.
Run with it.
I'll put him up and
you
knock him down. There we go.
Well, you knock him down anyway, Gar.
No, I do my best. Boy. Hey.
Now I want to see Captain Blood. I haven't seen that film.
Now he's Googling.
I love that
1928.
One. It's got Errol Flynn in it, too.
Bye.
Oh, my God. The Tasmanian swashbuckler.
Yes.
I am from Tasmania. You can tell by my tail.
You devil.
I think, you know, him being from South Africa, I think his family was kind of run out by the Boers. I was reading some stuff here.
The wild pigs?
No,
maybe
you.
That's a rep on South African? That I didn't know. You bore.
Yep. Oh, gosh, they show him doing a lot of TV here on IMDb. They've got him on Texas Star Theater in 54 as Sherlock Holmes. The Philip Morris Playhouse. Casanova's Big Night, he was a narrator for that. Schlitz Playhouse, okay. He was a jewel thief.
Schlitz.
Svengali and the Blonde. It was a TV movie in 1955 called, and it was Svengali.
The Schlitz Maltliger
Ball. Here it is, Robert the Butler on the Eddie Cantor Comedy Theater.
Well, wasn't he in some movie like an Arab type thing where there's a genie or there was some kind of magic carpet or some kind of thing?
Oh, gosh. Was that the magic sword?
I think so, maybe.
From 1962.
The Republic version of Babes in Toyland?
I only watch a Laurel Hardy one of that.
Yep.
Oh, he really could have been the bad guy in the Disney version of Babes in Toyland. He had that evil look to him.
Yeah, well, if they had a live version of like that Aladdin one, he could have been him too, you know, the bad guy. He'd have been perfect. The nose and all that.
I think he's really one of the most versatile in that he could play a debonair, you know, leading man
a tiny type person a total shit.
Yeah. Yep.
A plethora of roles. Can we
a
say
plethora,
that?
Plethora, that's more than two.
You get
isn't
points
it?
For plethora. You do.
Really? I won 18 points for innocuous, okay?
Oh, no, that's a... what'd you say?
There you go, squaring on the radio
lie.
Again.
Beat that
shut
in Sweden.
That.
But anyway. Oh, this is taking forever. At the fine age of 50, blah, 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 I'm amazed at how much I know about makeup.
Yes, RuPaul. What?
Huh? What?
Ew, where are you?
I'm putting on my face.
No idea.
My horror movie, Extravaganza. Oh, and I found out it was 1943.
You Eleganza, I'm gagging on your Eleganza, darling.
Extravaganza. Yeah, there we go. Not to be confused with a Cardenza. Cardonza? Candenza? Cardenza. Anyway. Cordova. The car, no.
Yeah.
With that Cordovian leather.
Is that 12th to Corinthian leather, or is that something different?
No, the feature presentation this week will be from 1943, The Mysterious Doctor. So mysterious, I have no idea what the plot is.
There's a mysterious doctor. It's not Doctor Who, because I can't say that, because, you know.
It does have something to do with headless ghosts.
Doctor Whom?
No, headless ghosts, the mysterious doctor, and the headless ghosts. There might be a bee in there. I don't know.
Fear will freeze you when you face it.
The mummy.
Born from the darkest tomb of the pharaohs, it rises from the quiet dust of centuries to wreak a strange vengeance against mankind.
The mummy.
It tears steel bars like paper. It snaps men's spines like matchsticks. It walks through bullets like a ghost. It sees without eyes. It lives without breath. Yet its desires are strangely, madly human. The motion picture screen's most shocking experience in suspense. In chilling Technicolor. The Mummy.
I'm sorry, you know why I'm laughing? Early in my DJ career, I worked in this one nightclub, and I would come in very early. This withered old man would sit at the bar and start bothering all the young ladies coming in. So I would always introduce him and play that part of that commercial, The Mummy. What the heck, going real loud.
He's reaching for you now.
Don't you be talking about my mama.
His name was George.
Means George.
George. Hey, you know what? I've forgotten one thing. I've forgotten about Baz Rathbone. That while we brought this up when we showed one of the Sherlock Holmes movies, was that he was nominated for Best Supporting Actor for Oscar twice. Was beat out both times by the very same actor. Anybody know who that other actor was? The actor that beat him out twice for Best Supporting Actor. Anybody?
I don't know. I'm gonna take a stab at it and say Walter Brennan.
Yeah, Billy Tomlin. Walter Brennan. Walter Brennan.
We're looking at the same. Walter
Brennan.
Supporting
we're
looking
actor.
At the,
oh.
We're looking
Edward
at the
Arnold.
Same page.
I don't know.
but if you didn't, I know we used that in Terror by Night, which was really kind of cool because now that he has actually closed it, we. Mike Mason and I went and visited Little John at Rinaldi Jewelry, but we shot that one from Rinaldi Jewelry, and it was just a really, really cool thing to be there. And John was in a couple of our hosting segments, and a nice interview, and then a piece at the end he did by himself. So it was really a very special show to me. I'm sorry I forgot that originally. When I did put that in the movie, that is a cool.
For those
fact,
of you
Walter
that don't
Brennan,
know, he's referring to Little John Rinaldi from Big Chuck and Little John Show. John owns some jewelry stores here in Northeast Ohio.
He officially retired. His last day was Valentine's Day, and
yep.
I went up. Mike Mason and I went up on Friday. Yes, we did on Friday to. Get some of that discounted jewelry so we wouldn't be in trouble on Valentine's Day.
Five finger discount?
Discounted jewelry.
No.
Oh.
That little crooked nose going on with that jewelry there, pal?
Well,
we've
got about 2 minutes to go left on the live part of the broadcast, so it's time to say...
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Well, I suggest we get the remains of a good night's sleep. Remember, the test takes place tomorrow morning on Salisbury Plain.
This evening was brought to you by Frankenstone Tires.
Actually, that was one of those
shows.
You
want
to
hear a Peter Lorre imitation, do you?
Do you really?
Must be for me.
What? Hello, my name is Boo. Let me finish. Boo Berry and my new ghostly good blueberry-flavored cereal with a haunting blueberry taste. Boo Berry.
Boo to you, Blueberry.
Frankenberry's got strawberry-flavored sweeties.
Count Chocula's got chocolate sweeties.
But I've got blueberry-flavored sweeties.
Frankenberry.
Count Chocula.
And new Boo Berry.
Okay.
Blueberry Peter flavored sweeties?
Yes. Well, thanks to the live listeners, including Gil Girl, Fogs Bane, Evil Annie Reppert. Those we cannot see, we know you're there. Thanks for shooting us messages. And thank you, my guests and co-hosts and guests and folks, 66, Gar the Ghoul, and Dave Binkley. Thanks, guys.
Yay. Do you remember that old cartoon? It was Looney Tunes where it had Peter Lorre and the dog. Use it, bud.
We'll see you, next week right here on Erie House Radio. Bye-bye.
Oh.
And we're in the bonus.
You guys remember that? The Peter Lorre cartoon?
I remember Warner Brothers, but they were doing caricatures of the actors sitting at a bar.
Don't you remember and the dog was trying to cover up for Bugs Bunny? He brought him in, and he looks at me and goes, I didn't know Leopold could dance.
Yeah,
no, you
I remember that one.
My brain cells don't fire as good as they used to. Otherwise, I'd probably pick up on that.
That was a great cartoon. I think Gar is right. There's an earlier one, too, in black and white, possibly,
right.
Where they're at a restaurant, and there were a bunch of characterizations.
All
Peter
of
Lorre
them, yeah, like Bogart and the Three Stooges and all of them. I remember that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was where I went, but...
Does Baby Wanted Rabbit?
Yes. That one. Baby wants rabbit.
Hush and Pepper.
Yeah, they were all the Marx Brothers. Everybody was in that one.
Yeah. That was great.
Yeah, and it was due to Warner Brothers. I had to go look up the word Hush and Pepper, figure out what Hush and Pepper was.
It's a rabbit, honey.
It's your bunny.
It's German. It's a cooked rabbit, yeah.
Your bunny. With carrots and potatoes and all kinds of stuff.
My nana's from Germany, so, you know.
My nana's from Germany?
She was, yeah.
I have this terrible urge now to watch a Sherlock Holmes movie.
Holmes, yeah.
I know, I think they might have one on
better
TV.
Homes
sure
and Gardens.
There's lots of places you can watch them on the Internet Archive.
Yeah, they do have a few of them even on YouTube. They do. I watched a bunch of Ed Wood on there. I did.
Yeah.
Some of you guys got to show some old Ed Wood ones, not like the usual ones, but like the Sinister Urge and those ones.
Yeah. I don't know if those are
girls
public
running
domain.
Around doing robberies, you know. Those ones are fun, and they're so bad, they're delicious.
I know.
Yeah,
but I don't think
everybody
they're in public domain.
Just because the movie is bad, it's insane. And just because the movie is bad,
yeah,
doesn't
but if
make
they're
it
on
public
YouTube,
domain.
Aren't they? Or they usually yank them. You know, if they're not public domain.
It depends who puts them up.
I think somebody has. And it also depends if somebody doesn't make a complaint against it, then they won't pull them down.
Yeah. But they might make a complaint
they have
against
bots,
you.
Though.
That's true.
I uploaded something. It was my tribute to Clink, actually. I have to re-edit it because there was a piece of music that somebody laid claim to. I don't know if it's true or not, but I just don't like fighting, so.
It's easier to avoid them.
There's a company in Germany that thinks that every piece of big band music ever made was owned by them.
Yeah.
And they do that just so they can monetize your videos.
Yeah.
And get a piece.
It's a tough thing
they don't want to hunt. So, I'd rather take it out than you.
They do say that sometimes on YouTube. I've had videos there, too. Well, you're not in trouble. You don't have to take it down, but you can't monetize it, which is what Dave was referring to. They're going to monetize it. So
exactly,
right,
though. But most people, none of the horrors monetize any of it. We do it for each other, basically. I mean, you know, except for the ones that go on TV, then, yeah, you got to be real careful. But otherwise, it's for, you know, our own little thing.
Well, here's two
yeah.
to go look for. There are two albums put out by the Guggenheimer Sauerkraut Band, and I suggest you find both. They're great.
Is it as good as the Schmengi Brothers?
It's an actual band thing. It's put out in the 1950s, I believe. A Guggenheimer Sauerkraut Band.
Oh,
Oompa stuff, but really bad.
It sounds like an Oompa band. No.
Yeah, but they on purpose destroy music. It's kind of like Spike Jones we were talking about last night. They do the first interpretations that they can of classical music.
Don't you remember the Second City Television when John Candy and Eugene Levy were the Schmengies? and they used to do polka
yes.
like Michael Jackson.
Right.
Like that.
Yes.
It was just terrible. I loved it.
Yeah.
I was able to catch at that time. I had HBO, and they did a special together. I think Schmengi's The Last Waltz, I think it was called. And they talked about all the things they did, even trying Strike, Spares, and Schmengi's. They were hosting a bowling show, and they called it Strike, Spares, and Schmengi's. And whenever somebody was going to dramatic time, they would play the accordion and throw the guy off, and he ended up throwing a gutter ball. You know?
I loved them, though. I did. They were so bad. It's like Weird Al. You know, he kind of carried on their legacy in his way.
Yeah, Weird Al has said many times in interviews that his strongest muse was Spike Jonze in the City Slickers. Although his father was Ivan? What was his name? He was a famous accordion player.
See, terrible kind of goes with it unless, you know, like Weird Al or someone. Other than that, I don't know. How did polka music make its way to Mexico? I want to know.
Believe me, with my actual last name, I've had my share of polkas in my life, I'll tell you.
I'm sure, but do you notice how that Mexican music, the mariachi music has polka in it? Did Hitler invade Mexico at one time or another we didn't know about it?
I don't know. I think there's elements of some styles of music you'll just find in others, whether it's the beat or the melody.
No,
or
got the accordion, the oop-pump-pump thing going. They just had a Latin twist to it.
Spain's in Europe. It's close.
This is true. This is true. Maybe they brought it to Mexico.
I have no idea.
But you're in a double Kowalski, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you're a Polish pediatrician.
Yes. It appears that I might be at least half Paisan.
Oh, well, there you go. What's the matter for you? Gretchen said one of his brothers was Italian.
Which one, Zeppo?
No, Chico. Remember how he had the Italian first name?
Yeah. Yeah. Those guys were brilliant. I should do a show on the Marx Brothers. They were absolutely brilliant, all three of the primary ones.
Well, Zeppo, he said, he goes, Gretchen said, he was the funniest one of us off stage. He was hilarious. He goes, get him on stage and he sucked. So we gave him a small role.
But each in their own way, each in their own way, though, they were brilliant. Like, you know, Groucho with his delivery and his quick wit. I loved Chico's piano skills and his, broken English.
Especially when he pointed
English.
That finger and hit the keys with his camera, with his finger, like he's pointing to it like a
gun.
Yeah,
the little tip of his finger. Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just the manner in which he played was entertaining.
On the harp. Yeah.
Yeah, and all his great expressions and mime work. Yeah, Harpo was...
Yeah, exactly. He did everything without saying anything, you know?
I liked how they were musicals, too, you know? The songs were clever. Most of them performed by Groucho, but...
Lydia. Encyclopedia.
She's got chlamydia or something, I don't know.
I didn't want to... You went there. See, I stopped.
I'm sorry. I don't know.
I liked Captain Spaulding. I thought that was pretty good.
Captain Spaulding, you see, and they got... All those names came from him. Otis Driftwood. What was the other one? Rufus
Yeah,
P,
they used
Firefly.
All those names in House of 1,000 Corpses.
Yeah, every one of them. They were Grouchoites.
Yep. Rufus T. Firefly.
Yep. Otis P. Driftwood.
I loved Duck Soup because it's one of the many comedies I like where they were really ripping at Hitler. And
yeah.
The Stooges did it. The Marx Brothers did it. I thought that was great.
It was a
Chaplin did
time,
it in The Great
you know?
Dictator. Yep.
And what better way to like take the sting out of him than to make fun of him?
Last guy to really rip on Hitler well was Mel Brooks.
Mel Brooks.
Yeah.
Screen time for Hitler and Germany.
Yeah. Yep.
I love that movie. I do.
He even did the Hitler rap, too, as a promo for one of the movies or something. But, yeah, he did.
Yes,
that
was a funny
song. You can find
that
on YouTube. The Hitler rap, yeah, it was very funny.
And also at the end of History of the World, they did fake trailers for films coming up, like Jews in Space and
Space.
Hitler
and they were
on
dancing
ice.
In the little circle. They were flying around in the Star of David.
Yep, that was fun. There'll never be another Mel Brooks. The stuff he did is so non-PC now, and it's terrible.
Everybody cries about everything. Yeah.
Use the Schwartz.
The Schwartz and the Spaceballs Part 2, the search for more money.
Yep. He was a brilliant comic, and God bless him, he's still with us.
Yeah, he is.
He is.
Carl Reiner as well, yes?
Yeah.
I saw Dr. on the two of them. Essentially was around the entire thing that they've done all these years. Nothing ever written on their 2,000-year-old man routine. They have
2,000-year-old man.
The late 1950s together. They kept getting invited to parties just so they could get up there and do these things. And nothing was ever written, and Carl Reiner always thought it was so great. He was going to try and paint Mel into a corner just to see how Mel would get his way out, and he always did. You know, it just was absolutely those two together.
Improv,
just absolutely,
total improv.
Such great artists.
Could you imagine if they did? I mean, they're both still with us, bless them. They should record another album, The 3,000-Year-Old Man.
Well, they did one. They did one about 10 years ago again, and that was like, I think it was the 2,030-year-old man, because it was like the 30th anniversary of them doing it publicly.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
And that's because I know my son really got into that. And I got him, I think for Christmas, I got him that CD.
I have to dig that up. I didn't know that existed.
I didn't hear about it either. It's cool, though. Yeah, but
the things
good
you learn out of hearing
kids
on radio.
Stuff, you know? Because kids don't realize anything's funny before the minute they're born or later, you know?
Yep.
They don't realize what a vast, great storage vault there is of great stuff.
Got exposed to all this stuff, you know? Laurel and Hardy and Abbott Costello and as well as Thriller and Twilight Zone and things like that. My sons, as Dale as your kids did, I'm sure.
Yes, absolutely.
What about
all these things that we exposed them.
I remember showing my kids Harpo and them, and they thought he was still alive. You see what? They thought he was still around. I had to explain to them, no, he was gone before I got here. You know, the Stooges.
What about
almost?
Become the judge.
I think this is why all of us do what we do. Dave makes, you know, Weirdness a really bad movie. He participates in he's my co-host on the oldie tiny radio deal we do on Friday nights here. We just want to share this stuff. You know, our kids, you know, are grown. They've already been exposed to it and find other people who haven't heard some of these shows And again, it's a sharing experience for me because each and every week I learn something from one or all of you. Gar, 66, Dave, I learned something from all of you that I didn't know before.
It is. It's a learning experience. I just love that some of the younger ones are still tuning in. There's still some of them.
You don't get it. Dale just Bill just blamed all of us.
Yep.
He did, but
he did.
but you know what? I think they can tell we have such a good time in sharing these. Not only that, but telling stories and going off course and razzing on each other a bit and stuff. They can tell that we're having a heck of a lot of fun when we're doing this.
Oh,
and Gar, I want to thank
absolutely.
You so much for joining in on Friday night. It is just
yeah.
such a hoot and a holler. I know I've told Dale. I don't know if I've gotten a chance to tell you, but I've always had this love for radio, and I really never had the chance to re-express it. Didn't think anybody cared until Dale started this up, and he's really kind of ignited in me the love I have for old radio by doing
I'm old enough. I remember when TV was just, you know, coming on, and the radio shows were still going, and they had this thing called Murder Theater. I don't know if you guys ever heard it. And it would start with this gunshot, boo, and then this loud scream. And me and my sister would cover our head with a pillow. It would just scare us to death, and I loved that stuff.
Well, the state said I either do this or pick up trash, so.
But the radio
so you throw it out
use your total
huh?
imagination. You know, they don't furnish
and oddly,
everything for you. Like,
and oddly, the
like
two are related. But, no.
Yes, they are.
No. They're going to cut us off here any moment now in the bonus time, guys. Thanks so much for calling in and sharing and paying a little homage to Basil Rathbone.
And thanks for the nod there, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Bye, guys.
Well, I didn't have you.
Good night, everybody.